When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season show us big risk can yield big rewards. Like Rob Reilly, the creative head of one of the world's leading advertising firms.
I try to create environments where anybody can say anything without any judgment.
Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating.
I got a big heart, and I'm very forgiving, but like, don't abuse it. It's been abused enough.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bullen. We are here yet again in our awesome new audio studio. And Scott, I wanted to take a moment before we begin just to let you know that I understand there's some inequality in our microphones here, and we're going to work to fix that.
Really?
Well, yeah, for everybody who doesn't know, I got this. One of our microphones has this fancy kind of arm thing.
In the way it looks, I was thinking you meant sound quality.
Oh, no, man.
Possibly.
There's not a microphone that can make you sound bad.
You do have a very fancy mic going on there, I'll tell you that.
It's not my decision, man.
I have to hold my own mic. It's
luck
like,
of the
it's
draw.
Like one of the 70s game show stick mics that I'm
yeah.
holding right now.
We'll get you a chair, too.
It looks like a small baton or something.
It's a good look. Okay, but anyway, with that aside, we are going to delve back into the world of engine podcasts today, right?
Yeah, that's right. But we've got this one sounds confusing initially.
Mm-hmm.
Not all that confusing, really. It just kind of is like a different angle on an engine that we're sort of familiar with, right?
Right, exactly.
That's been used throughout history.
Yes, we are talking about turbine or turbine engines.
Yeah, that's right. I'm glad you said that because I'll find myself, and we've mentioned this ahead of time, turbine, I'm going to say both, you know, on and off. Don't let it bother you listeners, but just kind of whatever comes to mind at that point.
Yeah, I have committed the same sort of act with my famous Porsche
yeah.
switch.
Yeah, it happens. Tomato, tomato. But listen, I think what we should do is maybe we should initially start off explaining gas turbine, maybe? A gas turbine engine operation.
Yeah.
And then we'll get to this new version that we want to talk about, which is the rotating detonation engine, which is a kind of a twist on the gas turbine theme, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so
it's
I think,
remix.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we need to maybe talk about the gas turbines first. And I guess, man, this one goes way back. I had no idea how far back gas turbine engines were invented. The patent for this thing, Ben, I don't know if you found this or not.
Mm-hmm.
Did you read the year that this thing was created?
Go ahead and lay it on them.
The first gas turbine patent, there I did it, gas turbine patent. was in 1791, Ben, by a guy named John Barber. 1791.
Now, that's gas turbine, and we should point out that there are several different types of turbine engines.
Yeah.
There
yeah.
are water turbines, wind turbines, steam turbines.
Yeah, and they each have their own look and feel, I guess, to them, or the way they operate. It's basically the same principle behind all of them. The steam turbine, if you want to get into it, I guess, is that there's something being burned. There's coal, there's natural gas.
Right. Typically a fossil fuel.
Yeah, it could be a
but
nuclear
you could
reactor.
Use a nuclear reactor.
Could be, yeah.
Heck, you could burn wood.
You could, yeah. Anything that creates heat, really. You need that to create steam, and then the steam is forced through a channel or a pathway of some manner
mm-hmm.
that turns a great big, think of it as like a fan. mm-hmm. an internal fan, and the fan spins around and around and around, and that drives a generator. And
right.
the generator is where you see, you get electric power out of, you know, at the end of all of this.
And this could be interesting to a lot of people who are perhaps not so familiar with power plants. Mm-hmm. It's amazing when we think about how old this technology is and how crucial it still is to modern society.
Mm-hmm.
We are literally heating up water, creating steam, and this steam is spinning a shaft that makes a generator work.
Exactly, which we draw electricity from then. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and the same thing with the water turbines. You know, you see these giant hydroelectric plants, you know,
right.
where think about Hoover Dam.
Exactly.
Inside, you've probably seen those enormous hydroelectric, turbines, really, mm-hmm. that are operating, that create all the electricity for, you know, that surrounding area, including the Las Vegas Strip, which is an enormous power suck, right?
Yeah.
That takes a ton of energy to run that. And that just gives you an idea of how powerful water can be to generate electricity.
Right.
Well.
And they look a little bit different because water has such a higher density and it's slower moving than steam. Mm-hmm. Windmills are what you should think of when you think of wind turbines.
Yeah, windmill. Now, there's the old school windmills that are, you know, the great big cloth fanned ones that
right.
you think of in Holland.
And Don Quixote is stabbing a lance at them.
Exactly.
Jousting.
Yeah, that's not the kind we're talking about. This mm-hmm. is more the modern version, I guess, because those were used for grinding and, you know,
right.
producing, you know, flour and grains and things like
exactly,
that.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
The ones we're talking about are the great big enormous ones that you see on the side of the highway sometimes
mm-hmm.
That generate electricity.
Out in the Midwest or maybe off the coast of some places.
Sure. The bird choppers.
The bird choppers. Yes, that'll teach those birds. We're joking. Stop writing the email.
All right, listen. And then there's another one that's the one that I guess is more the focus or the style that eventually our rotating detonation engine is built off of, and that's the gas turbine engine.
Right. Now, as we said before, there's water, there's wind, there's steam. Now we're dealing with pressurized gas. This spins the turbine. So in all of these engines, The basic concept is fairly simple. In all of these engines, the engine is producing its own pressurized gas by burning something. You know, this could be kerosene, this could be a jet fuel mix of some sort, this could be propane, and the heat that comes from that expands air, and that high speed rush of this hot air spins the turbine, right?
Yeah, basically. Exactly. Yeah, that's a very succinct way to put that, Ben. That's really clean. It's not really a complicated system on the surface. I mean, there's a lot
right.
of complex engineering that goes into this and allowing it to just hold together as it does this, because they spin ridiculously fast. I mean, we're talking like, you know, 35,000, 40,000 RPMs, you know, that type of speed, even higher at some, you know, in some mm-hmm. cases. At idle, they're spinning at like, you know, 20,000 RPMs or something crazy like that.
That is crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, and we should say that, you know, we mentioned 1791 was the first gas turbine patent, but the first commercial use of the gas turbine engine wasn't until, I think it was 1939 in Switzerland.
Yeah, which just gives us a sense of the material constraints of the time. We had to be able to, we being the human species,
yeah.
had to be able to build something that could resist or withstand all this pressure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. And, you know, it was used for a commercial use initially. It was like an industrial application.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, and not much later, an airplane, the first aircraft that was flown using only turbojet power, was a craft called the Henkel HE-178. And again, that's back in the late 1930s. So,
mm-hmm.
Man, I mean, it's been around a long, long time, and we've adapted the use of this thing
yeah.
for automobiles as well. Now, aircraft is the one that we typically think of, right?
Right. We usually think of, you know, turbofans.
Yeah. Yeah. But since we're a car show, we're going to talk about some of the car uses as well, right?
Yes.
And, there have been a number of gas turbine powered vehicles. Now, in the 1950s, there was a series of cars from GM, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was an experimental series of vehicles.
Right.
That was the Firebird series, right?
Yep. They were three Firebirds, and one of them looks like an honest-to-God jet on wheels.
I think, I'm going to say two of the three look like a jet on
wheels. Oh, the Firebird 2 as well?
I think the three.
I'd say the three.
We'll talk about that later.
You know what? We should do a podcast on it.
It's not a bad idea because that's a great topic.
Yeah.
And then in the 1960s, Chrysler did something called the turbine car, which was simply named. But those are the copper colored vehicles that we saw. We've done a podcast on that.
I was waiting for it to come up. We have done an episode entirely on this Chrysler, so you can check this out if you're interested.
And a little known fact is that. In 1954, Plymouth, the Plymouth division of Chrysler, also did another concept car that was also turbine powered. That you'll see some publicity photos of this one where there's someone, I don't know who it was in the press or maybe somebody from the company was putting their hand down by the exhaust. And you would think that's a bad move, but apparently it was so cooled at that point that that they were able to put their hand behind it, which was a big deal.
Right, because earlier turbine cars. Dang it, Scott, you've got me doing it. Earlier versions of these cars had a tremendous concern about the temperature of the exhaust, which we can also talk about, but we've touched on this in some of our earlier podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, this isn't something that has just happened, you know, like 40, 50 years ago with automobiles. If you go up to 1993, Chrysler again made a car called a race car. It was a concept car called the Patriot. And that was supposed to be a car that was going to run in the 24 hours of Le Mans, but never did. It just never got past the production stage. I saw that car one time at an engineering facility.
No way.
In person. Got to walk around it, touch it, all that stuff.
Did you get to hop in?
Did not, because it was the way it was parked and the way it was. It was just set off to the side in some conference room. It was really weird.
That is strange. It's not even the centerpiece?
No, and I'm sure that it eventually made its way to the Chrysler Museum or something like that, but it was just some engineering building.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at, like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
Hi there. I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. It's getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine, and I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways I imagine you haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Margaret Atwood, Questlove, Cate Blanchett, and Oscar Isaac. If that sounds like a varied group of people, it's because it is. I always wanted to make a show where one week we could sit with a politician like Beto O'Rourke, the next an author like Min Jin Lee, or TV titans like Bill Hader and Quinta Brunson. Basically, this is a podcast driven by curiosity and an abundance of research. Conversations where people actually start to sound like people. In recent weeks, I sat with Dan Levy, Ava DuVernay, Benny Safdie, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. I hope to see you there.
One other point, too, Scott. Other vehicles, aside from cars and planes, use these. Military vehicles use gas turbine engines, and we just want to ping that because it's going to come up later in our podcast.
Oh, definitely,
the military applications.
Yeah, military finds a use for these as well.
So why would somebody use a gas turbine engine?
Well, I mean, a lot of places have, and that's the thing is like the Fiat's tried it, Rover's tried it, Lotus has tried it, Toyota's tried it, Volvo.
Yeah,
Jaguar had an amazing concept car just recently. I mean, they just canceled this car, Ben, though. It was supposed to be in production. They canceled it in December of 2012. That's how recent this is.
Wow.
Now, it had it's called the CX-75. If you want to take a quick look at it, and it's a hybrid electric vehicle. But this one's really different. There were five prototypes built of this one. It uses two diesel-fed micro gas turbine engines in order to power it. And this is like a $1 million supercar that Jaguar is putting together for the 75th anniversary. That's why the 75 designation. It stands for Concept Experimental. 75 is for the 75th anniversary.
And they canceled it just in December.
Just canceled it, but there were supposedly five prototypes built, so watch for those to appear, because I think they said three of them may be sold. The other two are going to be like promotional vehicles of some kind. You know, Jaguar's going to own one. Mm-hmm. Another one's going to go to a museum.
And one's going to go to Jay Leno.
Yeah. No doubt. Now, you said, before I rudely interrupted, but you said that, you know, why would they not continue on with the jet powered engine, really, the turbine powered engine.
Right.
Well, I can count like maybe three simple ones. First one is cost, right?
Oh yeah, they're expensive. They're more expensive than your average diesel engine, that's for sure.
Well, as you can see, the Jaguar with a $1 million price tag.
Right. And they're not just expensive in terms of the manufacturing, although mm-hmm. they are much more difficult to manufacture, right?
Definitely, yeah, because they have really high tolerances because they're so strong. These are extremely powerful engines.
So there's also a maintenance issue there too, because mm-hmm. imagine the yearly maintenance costs for, you know, a turbine powered car.
Definitely.
Know?
Yeah, I think it would throw a lot of people for a loop to find out that, you know, take it in for maintenance and it's like, I can imagine what it costs to take in a small jet for maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
It would be the same thing taking your car and your vehicle in. The other thing now, this doesn't apply to the Jaguar, apparently, or the newer gas turbine powered engines, vehicles rather.
Yeah.
But we've talked about this in the past, jet powered vehicles that we've done.
Yes.
They have a slow takeoff, and they're slow to decelerate as well.
Mm-hmm.
But once they get cruising, that's where their real ability shines.
That's where they shine. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So you know, this isn't the quick off the line type vehicle that you think, except for the Jaguar.
Isn't that because it's a hybrid?
I think that's it. Yeah, I think that's why. That's good. You know, good point. But it's like, you know, got a super fast 0-60 time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you watch like a jet powered vehicle at a demo, at say like a, you know, tractor pull or something, wherever you are, we've mentioned this many times, but it's a very slow ramp up to speed, and then it's full power, and then, you know, then backing it down is another slow process, and sometimes involves, you know, parachutes and things like
right.
that.
Right. And also, let's keep in mind that gas turbine engines are expensive in terms of fuel.
Yeah.
That's going to be one of the big cons if you are someone who owns, an M1 tank, for instance, which does have a gas turbine engine. If you're someone who owns, you know, a plane that uses these, or a ship. But one of the things that makes this tricky is that they do have this great power to weight ratio, and you get more bang for your buck because a gas turbine engine that has the same power as a reciprocating engine is going to be smaller.
Now, also, there's one other point here that I think we need to mention.
What's that?
The exhaust. The exhaust mm-hmm. comes into play in a lot of these vehicles now. Did you know that the exhaust coming out of the back end of this thing, it's the speed of the exhaust is something amazing. It's like 1,300 miles per hour is like the wind speed at the very tip of the exhaust, like right at the very edge of it. And the temperature of the exhaust coming out. Now, I know that there are systems that cool exhaust, and I'm sure that this Jaguar has, you know, cooling mm-hmm. going on. But some of the temperatures that I've seen as far as ratings go, it's like 2,000 degrees, Ben.
Right. This is not something you want to stand behind, which is why it was such a big deal with the turbine car,
no,
right?
Definitely not. So it's extremely hot. It's just, in a way, it's impractical to have something like that out in public, you know, where somebody could be harmed just simply by walking past your tailpipe.
Yeah. And that's one of those things where, not to sound unfriendly, but you can never underestimate, I mean, won't call it stupidity, but the obliviousness.
Sure.
How about that?
Yeah,
is that fair?
I could see that. I could see someone walking right past it, just not even thinking about it, and suddenly, you know, poof, their shorts are gone because, you know, they went up in smoke.
Mm-hmm. And so I think we've broke down the idea here of a gas turbine engine. We've explained the way it works in terms of the comparison to other turbine engines, mm-hmm. you know, the three basic parts, the compressor that compresses the air, the combustion area that burns the fuel, and, of course, the turbine, which is where the energy is extracted.
Yeah, and there's a central shaft that, mm-hmm. that translates that power, you know, all that rotational power that that can be used in vehicles like a helicopter.
Yeah.
You know, the exhaust is then routed off a different direction. And this is different than in a jet application. Now, there's a central shaft in a jet engine as well, but that uses more of the exhaust gases for thrust rather than the rotational power. They're not trying to drive a transmission. They're not trying to drive a wheel or a rotor or anything like that. And, you know, the larger jets that you see, like, you know, when you go to the airport and you look at, you know, those enormous jets that are,
yeah.
you know, as tall as, you know, anybody that's out on the tarmac, they're huge, mm-hmm. Or two times as tall. Those are called turbofan engines.
And right, yes.
A turbofan, really, it's not a whole lot different from just a standard gas turbine engine, in that it incorporates also a large fan at the very front. And the fan, while that's spinning, that's drawing in even more air. It just pushes more air through the engine. Now it's cooler air, and mm-hmm. it goes around the compression area, so it's cooling as it goes, but it also aids in thrust a little bit. I don't know how much, really. I don't think a whole lot. But as mm-hmm. the faster the engine spools up, the faster the fan spins, the more air it brings in. It's just it's a complementary system, really.
Yeah. The air that the fan moves is called bypass air.
Okay.
You know why?
Right? Why is it?
Because it bypasses.
Bypasses everything inside,
the,
right?
Yeah, the turbine part of the engine mm-hmm. and moves it straight through to the back.
Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that that's mainly for cooling. I really do, because now I know that there's like a cool section of the engine, which is at the front. There's a hot section that's at the back end, and as that cool air flows over that hot metal, I can't help but think it's some type of insulator. You know,
that can make sense. It does also, though, as you said, provide some thrust.
And maybe a little bit. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it does. It moves a lot of air, right?
Right.
But as far as the
focus force,
yeah, and
thrust.
Being able to tune it, because there's a nozzle at the back end of a lot of jets that can open or close, right? And that mm-hmm. that increases or decreases the amount of thrust that engine produces, right?
Yes.
That's how it's controlled, I mean, other than RPM, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
So we've done an okay look, I think, at what a gas turbine or turbine in general engine is. And so now we're going to get to the fun part, which is going to be the rotating detonation engine, ... ellipses. But first, let's talk about something completely different.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. On Purpose's mission is to create impactful conversations to help you become happier, healthier, and more healed. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating. You'll be laughing, crying, and have so many impactful takeaways after this interview.
I had this, like, you know, homie lover friend for a long time. He's very disrespectful to me, very kind of messed up to me. But in my mind, we could get married. We had the most beautiful babies. He handsome. I'm pretty. Like, it would be so cool. He's smart and intellectual. I'm kind of smart, I think. Like, it would be fun. We have the best conversations. Like, we have fun, but then he would treat me like crap.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways I imagine you haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Margaret Atwood, Questlove, Cate Blanchett, and Oscar Isaac. If that sounds like a varied group of people, it's because it is. I always wanted to make a show where one week we could sit with a politician like Beto O'Rourke, the next an author like Min Jin Lee, or TV titans like Bill Hader and Quinta Brunson. Basically, this is a podcast driven by curiosity and an abundance of research. Conversations where people actually start to sound like people. In recent weeks, I sat with Dan Levy, Ava DuVernay, Benny Safdie, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. I hope to see you there.
Hi there. I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. It's getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine. And I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
All right, so let's get back into our main topic here. How about that?
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about these rotating detonation engines, because it's just a twist on it. It sounds complex, right?
Yeah, sounds complex,
and it is. I mean, we don't mean to downplay this at all.
Right.
But it's not really all that much different from just a gas turbine engine. It's just like it's a little variation of that.
Yeah, and I want to say before we dig into this that you and I have learned our lesson, haven't we, Scott? We're not going to shoot ourselves in the foot.
Oh, no. We're not going to get too deep into this as far as, exactly how it operates and the tolerances and all that stuff.
We are not physicists.
No. There's plenty of information out there about this engine, so a lot of people can look at it and, read the specs on the whole thing if you'd like.
Yeah.
But the interesting part about this is that, not only is it a twist on this older technology,
uh-huh.
There's someone who's very, very interested in this new technology, right?
Yes, and may I spill the beans?
Why not?
It's our friends at the U.S. Navy, most particularly the Naval Research Laboratory, which we're going to refer to as the NRL. Scott, can I hit you with some statistics?
I think so.
Oh, good. Okay, well, stop me if I can't.
Okay.
So right now, there are about 430 gas turbine engines, and they're spread across 129 U.S. Navy ships.
Okay, so you're saying they're already using the older version, the gas
right.
turbine engines.
Yes,
okay.
Precisely.
Okay.
So these engines, Scott, they burn approximately $2 billion worth of fuel every year.
Oh, my gosh. That's an awful lot of fuel.
And that's approximate. I don't know. When people say approximate with a number like 2 billion,
yeah.
I get nervous.
Yeah, I think they're rounding down a bit maybe, huh?
Approximately is a tricky word, my friend. But okay, so it's in their interest to do what they can to reduce either the amount of money spent on fuel or the amount of fuel used, right?
Sure. So they want to make their ships more aquadynamic, right?
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Well, maybe not, though. Maybe they're just going to change around the engine, right?
Oh, maybe. Well, that's one of the goals. And, of course, with an operation as large as the United States Navy, we can assume that they're pursuing concurrent goals, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So one of the things that the researchers there at the NRL believe is that this type of engine, this rotating detonation engine, will have the potential to meet a 10% increased power requirement at the same time, reducing fuel use by 25%.
So 10% increase in power, 25% less fuel?
Yeah.
What's the catch?
Well, here's the catch. Remember how earlier we kind of mentioned that there were some complex physics to these engines?
Yeah.
Well, that's still true.
Okay.
It hasn't changed since we said that a few minutes earlier.
Maybe it has.
Maybe it has. You know what? Maybe it has. We should check Twitter. But the thing is that the U.S. Navy has a history of looking into these detonation engines. And this is a pretty old idea. I was pretty startled by this. The idea of a rotating detonation engine dates back to more than 20 years ago now.
Yeah, the patent was filed in 1982, and it was granted finally in 1988 by a guy in Rockville, Maryland. This inventor, I'm going to mess up his name here.
Mm-hmm.
Schmuel
Eidelman?
Yeah, that's pretty good. Eidelman I got, but S. Eidelman, how about that?
Sure.
But anyways, it's been around for quite a while, this idea. And just to give you an idea of what it really means, I mean, and this is maybe the best example here, the best way I can describe what's happening.
Okay.
This is actually coming from an article in Physics Today. And
right.
they
okay.
describe the detonation that happens within this thing, instead of being chaotic and just happening, not that jet engines are that way or gas turbine engines are that way, but slightly more than this, because this is even more controlled.
Right.
They say that the detonation happens in what they call a sequential circular manner around the engine. And the first detonation sets off a cycle in which the pressure from ignition continues around the chamber, igniting each ignition in sequence.
Yeah, so it's sort of like scheduled detonations.
Yeah, and if you look at the charts with this, now it's tough to see, but they've got like... what do they call them? Thermal graphs, maybe?
Yeah.
That show an engine and it shows where the detonation is happening. And it looks like it's spiraling down and out towards the exhaust. Mm-hmm. And that just continues to repeat itself as it goes down and around. I'm moving my hands like you can see that. But
in sort of a corkscrew fashion.
A corkscrew. That's probably the best way to say it. Yeah. So it's and the ignition from each one of these keeps that entire cycle moving. And it just becomes like super efficient as it keeps going. It just, this rotation becomes more and more efficient. And you said it's what, 25% more efficient?
Yeah.
Ten percent
more efficient, but 25% 25% reduction in fuel
that's
use.
That's right. And you know what? I've got another number here for you, and I don't know if you came across this or not, but
what's that?
The fuel savings each year, we're talking like $400 million in fuel savings each year based on that 25%. So it's an enormous savings just by changing over from a gas turbine engine to a rotating detonation engine.
Right. So if you spend just, for instance, $200 million researching this idea and you get a working engine out of it, then it is still worth the time. There's one thing that we should say. The current gas turbine engines that are used are they're attractive to the Navy because they scale up to large power very well. They're pretty self-contained. And they're easy to maintain, especially when you think of the economy of scale if you're the Navy versus, you know, Ben and Scott in their turbine car garage, then it's a little easier to maintain these.
Yeah, they need enormous amounts of power.
Exactly. And this, what should we call them? The old school gas turbine engines or the current ones maybe? The current ones use something called the Brayton thermodynamic cycle. And this is just what we were talking about beforehand. It's where air is compressed, mixed with fuel, combusted at a constant pressure, and is expanded either to generate electricity or to generate propulsion.
Mm-hmm.
What is different here with the detonation cycle is exactly the way you described it. There's a scheduled sort of corkscrew, almost a domino effect of detonations setting off or igniting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two questions here. One, why hasn't it happened yet, which is something that we were addressing. And two, what's the likelihood that this will make it from prototype to production? So in our first question, one of the best answers, which is a little weird, is that we already were researching, we being the U.S. Navy, we're already researching an earlier kind of thing, something you could sort of think of as the laser disc. If rotating I know it's a horrible comparison. If rotating detonation engines are the compact disc, right?
Sure, yeah.
Or the DVDs, then the pulse detonation engine is sort of the laser disc.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. Now I understand what you're saying here is that that's the precursor, the great big kind of clumsy, not the pulse wave jets are clumsy, but mm-hmm. In the example that you gave, the laser disc versus the CD. The rotating detonation engine ends up being a variation of this of the pulse jet engine.
Right.
And one of the inefficiencies in a pulse jet engine, because I think we've talked about these. I'm not sure if we have or not. I think I remember them coming up. I know we've looked at them on things like a lot of people make these at home, and they put them on bicycles and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think crazy, we did talk about them in a couple of strange vehicles.
Yeah, like go-karts or something. Uh-huh. They put them on strange vehicles, and they seem extremely dangerous to me, like really hot. But
you know the main disadvantage.
Yeah, the main disadvantage is that the combustion chamber has to be purged after each single pulse. So
mm-hmm.
This is where the detonation engine proves an improvement in mm-hmm. that, because these waves cycle around the combustion chamber, they constantly are flushing out that exhaust gas, and there's no need for like a complete purge before there's another detonation happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the case in a pulse wave jetter,
a pulse detonator.
Pulse detonator, there's a lot of different names for that particular type of jet engine. But so this is much more efficient. Now, one other thing we need to say here is they don't necessarily need a compressor like a
gas turbine engine
does, which, just to be honest, they're pretty complex, and they suck a lot of energy out of this whole system, right?
That's true.
I mean, that's like the big mechanical loss in this engine.
No, we're saying compressors suck a lot of energy.
Yeah, compressors do. But the thing is, with a rotating detonation engine, if you add a compressor, which is a, you know, I'm sure it's a little different. There's a variation of this, of course. But when you add a compressor, it makes them even more efficient. So you know, I'm sure that the Navy's looking at compressors to fit to these things as well. And that's one of the tie-ups in that, you know, they're not quite ready yet to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know the time frame of this thing?
Well, it's interesting because the time frame, from what I understand, is tied to a larger mandate that the Navy has given itself, which is to adapt electric power to create all electric ships and planes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because, you know, the...
Wait. All electric ships and planes?
Well, yeah, that's...
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Well, that's a tall order to fill.
Yeah, don't we sound like old codgers?
Yeah.
Electric planes!
Well, you know, I'm saying for Navy, I mean, for naval applications,
right.
Maybe I'm wrong, Ben, but maybe I just haven't seen us really get that close to this yet.
Well, we've got top people working around the clock. We should keep in mind, of course, that there is probably, not to sound all tinfoil hatty or whatever, but it is safe to assume that there's a lot of research going on backstage that we're not privy to.
Absolutely. I know that they're like, you know, they're like two decades ahead of us. So, you know, what we know is like what they developed 20 years ago or something, right?
Well, you know, that, I would consider that view optimistic. I would love to think that there's something like that. I don't know. Maybe there is, but we do know that the U.S. Navy has not made the switch yet. But there's a compelling economic reason to do this, because every time you hear about the U.S. Navy deployed anywhere in the world, you have to kind of imagine the supply chain. So think of it like an invisible leash. An invisible, really expensive leash extending from, you know, Washington all the way out. And that leash involves fuel as a huge cost. By the time that 1 gallon of fuel makes it to, you know, let's say an operation in Afghanistan.
Okay.
I mean, this is not the Navy, but let's just say, then that's going to be dramatically more expensive than it would be at a pump.
Yeah.
You know?
I think I've read this before that, you know, that by the time that fuel makes its way into whatever vehicle and is actually used, it's actually cost, the U.S. taxpayer something like, it's like in the 30 some odd dollars or even more, I think.
Yeah.
Am I way off on that? Maybe it's even more.
I think it's more.
It might be more. But,
and so
it's some crazy amount, and you can look it up, and I may be off, maybe 10% of what it costs. I don't even remember exactly, but it was some ridiculously high number.
Right. And so there is a compelling interest, but to go back to the original question, when these are going to be instituted across the Navy, that's a good question, Scott, and I don't know if that's one that's been conclusively answered.
I mean, I wonder if it's like a decade away or if it's like, you know, 5 years away, but imagine deciding that you're going to change every engine in every naval ship that we have.
Oh, yeah.
And aircraft as well, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's
the
idea.
This is major, major rework of the whole system. So you know, it's coming. Watch for these rotating detonation engines in the near future, I would say. Because, I mean, I think they're going to move on with this because, I mean, when you talk about a $400 million fuel savings each year.
Yeah.
And not only that, the increase in power. Mm-hmm. I mean, how beneficial is that? That's amazing. So, and you know, to be more efficient and more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great move.
Yeah, that is a move that could work for civilian as well as military applications. We have some articles on this for anybody who's interested in learning more about these engines. We have, of course, How Gas Turbine Engines Work by the famous Marshall Brain, and we have How the Rotating Detonation Engine Works, which I got to say, I enjoyed this this article, Scott. Now, you edited this one, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right, and I learned quite a bit. I mean, I had to kind of quickly study up on gas turbine engines and everything, but that was interesting. I mean, I just hadn't even really heard about it. It's relatively new to me, I mean, as far as the news is, but I was blown away by the efficiency and the extra power and, you know, just, it's amazing.
And I think, I wanted to say a little shout out here that the author makes a great point, in his author's note, you know,
her.
in her note. Oh, yeah. Gosh, excuse me.
Oh, yeah. That's all right. He may have had the wrong author there.
Yeah. But the note here that I thought was pretty insightful says, it doesn't appear that anyone suggested that the rotating detonation engine might actually have potential to be used in cars or trucks.
Mm-hmm.
But made a great point that a lot of stuff we use every day was originally developed for completely different purposes. Race cars and military vehicles are two common sources. So we have a great podcast on how many technological innovations came from racing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's common knowledge that quite a few of the innovations that we see in civilian cars today come from the military.
Yeah, it's not unheard of to think that, you know, that we're going to see some of these applications in some form trickle down into consumer use.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that'll be in, you know, heavy duty trucks, if it's going to be in commercial, you know, applications as far as, you know, commercial vehicles that carry heavy goods or whatever. I mean, it could be, you know, it could be passenger cars in some way. I don't know. I mean, we've talked about, you know, how many cars now that have tried, you know, using gas turbine engines.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's the Jaguar that's still out there that, you know, has, you know, the newest version of this now, all the way up until as late as 2012. And we've been kind of playing around with this for about, 65, 70 years, something like that in cars. So, it's not unheard of to think that, you know, maybe it'll happen.
Yeah, we would be interested to see the results. And I got to tell you, Scott, I had a good time doing this podcast. I thought we did all right.
I think we did okay, too. I mean, I know we didn't dive too deep into the applications or anything like that. But
we don't want to embarrass ourselves.
But, you know, just getting that information out there, because I think a lot of people just are unaware of it like I was until we did this article,
mm-hmm.
until we, you know, posted it on our site. And I think that there's a lot to learn there.
You know what? I think we should go ahead and make good on our earlier conversation to do a podcast on the Firebird. What do you think?
Yeah, I want to dig deeper on those. I think those are it's a cool series of vehicles.
Yes. Yes. Spoiler alert, everybody. But we're going to go and dig into the Firebirds and act surprised when you hear that on an upcoming podcast. In the meantime, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Do write to us and let us know what you think. We're on the newfangled internets. You can find us, CarStuffHSW, on Facebook and on Twitter. And you can send us a good old-fashioned email at
CarStuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season show us big risk can yield big rewards. Like Rob Reilly, the creative head of one of the world's leading advertising firms.
I try to create environments where anybody can say anything without any judgment.
Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart. In ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Questlove, and Cate Blanchett. In recent weeks, I had talked to actor Dan Levy, director Ava DuVernay, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.